Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the surprise capture of Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro and his wife following U.S. airstrikes ordered by President Trump is drawing mixed reactions from local protesters and lawmakers across the Catskills and the Hudson Valley. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar has the latest. Flu hospitalizations in New York hit a record high over the holidays. State health officials say hospitalizations jumped 24% in just 1 week, the highest total ever recorded. Coming up, why this flu season is more severe and why doctors say it's not too late to get vaccinated. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington, a preview of tonight's Janice Adams show, and Chamber Chats, we learn more about the Forest Lake Club in Hawley, Pennsylvania. It's coming up after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Minnesota Democratic Governor Tim Walz says he is ending his bid for re-election. Walz was also the running mate of former Vice President Kamala Harris when she ran for the presidency. Walz cited investigations into fraud in his state's child care program. He says he would have won another term but cannot give the campaign his all. Deposed Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro is being held at the federal courthouse in New York City. He'll make his first court appearance later today. U.S. troops captured Maduro and his wife over the weekend and brought him to the U.S. to face drug charges. Some Republican lawmakers have supported the military action. Connecticut Democratic Congressman Jim Himes says while Maduro has not been good for Venezuelan civilians, Congress must still assert oversight of the Trump administration.
Clearly, Congress needs to do something that it has not done because it's been under the control of the president's acolytes for the last, year or so, which is to assert itself, to say we are the legitimate representatives of the people, and you're now talking about using those people on foreign adventures that would have made Teddy Roosevelt blush. So, again, we're in the minority in the House and the Senate, but it is time for this Congress to stand up and say we have a role to play here.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. Houston is home to one of the largest communities of Venezuelan immigrants in the U.S. Houston Public Media's Natalie Weber reports there's been mixed reaction in the city.
Singing and waving flags, dozens of Venezuelan immigrants gathered in Houston suburbs to celebrate. Hector Machuca was among them.
It's a lot of emotions, altogether happiness, but at the same time, a little worry, and we're a little nervous.
However, some residents came out to oppose the operation. Caleb Karowski is an organizer with the Party for Socialism and Liberation, which led a protest over the weekend.
I think we already can see the results of U.S. interventions across the world, and we don't think that Venezuela will end up any different.
Reaction from Texas leaders remains split. For NPR News, I'm Natalie Weber in Houston.
Stocks opened higher this morning as oil markets remained subdued. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 570 points in early trading.
The U.S. military's capture of Venezuela's president and his wife over the weekend had little effect on global oil prices. Venezuela has large oil reserves, but its oil output has dropped sharply after years of neglect. While President Trump wants U.S. oil companies to revitalize the Venezuelan industry, the cost and time commitment necessary would be sizable. Crude oil prices in the U.S. are hovering well below $60 a barrel. Retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to fall. AAA says the average price of regular gas is now $2.81 a gallon. That's down about a penny from a week ago and about 25 cents less than this time last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The U.S. Mint is releasing new coins into circulation today for the nation's 250th anniversary, but the Trump administration will not release the coins celebrating women's rights and civil rights activists. The Mint is also considering releasing a $1 coin featuring Donald Trump, even though that's never been done for a sitting president. It's still raining in Northern California. The risk of flooding continues for areas around San Francisco Bay. From member station KQED, Billy Cruz has more.
After historic king tides and storm surge inundated low-lying places across the San Francisco region, tides are still higher than normal, according to meteorologists. There is a possibility of water up to 2 feet above ground level, and widespread rain across the region is only making matters worse. Lainey Hendricks is a spokesperson for Marin County in the Bay Area.
We are still seeing fairly high tides. Looking ahead, while they're, you know, the rain is tapering off, we still have, you know, moderate to high tides in the forecast again for tomorrow. So we may not necessarily be in the clear on flooding.
The National Weather Service has issued flood watches across the state. For NPR News, I'm Billy Cruz in San Francisco.
Conditions are very different in the southern plains. The National Weather Service has issued red flag warnings for the Texas Panhandle and parts of Oklahoma and New Mexico. Weather conditions are ripe for fire weather. That includes powerful winds, low humidity, and very dry grass. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Nicolas Maduro is set to make his first appearance in U.S. federal court in New York City later today. The proceeding is scheduled to take place at noon in the federal courthouse in Manhattan before U.S. District Judge Alvin K. Hellerstein. The Venezuelan president, who was captured by U.S. forces early Saturday in a surprise military operation in Caracas, is now awaiting trial on federal criminal charges, including narco-terrorism, conspiracy, and cocaine conspiracy. Maduro and his wife landed just about an hour from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, at the military base at Stewart International Airport on Saturday. Local protesters and lawmakers in the Catskills and Hudson Valley regions have mixed reactions about the news. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar reports.
About 60 miles north of Manhattan is Stewart International Airport. It's a relatively small airport with two main runways and a National Guard base in Newburgh, New York. But on Saturday afternoon, the upstate New York airport became the arrival point for Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores after they were captured and flown out of Venezuela. The two were captured during a series of large-scale explosive airstrikes ordered by President Trump without congressional approval. On Saturday, protesters, including the Mid-Hudson Valley Democratic Socialists of America chapter, gathered on Route 17K in Newburgh to push back on Trump's escalating attacks.
Hands off Venezuela! Hands off Venezuela!
Liana Zillis is the co-chair of the local DSA chapter. She says about 40 protesters gathered for hours outside the airport awaiting Maduro's arrival, with mixed reactions from people driving by.
There were a lot of friendly honks that we received from cars that were passing by. There were some people who were not as friendly, but there were far more people who were happy to see us.
Zillis says local protests can help pressure members of Congress to focus the country's resources on domestic issues.
We are making ourselves visible in every way that we can and making it clear that we don't want a war in Venezuela. That hurts working people in the U.S. It hurts working people in Venezuela. And it is the last thing that any of our countries need.
Upstate New York leaders were divided on the airstrikes. Congressmember Mike Lawler wrote in a social media post that Maduro's capture was important to ending the deadly flow of drugs into the country. But Congressmember Pat Ryan said the move was about oil and regime change. Maduro is expected to appear in federal court on Monday and faces federal charges, including narco-terrorism conspiracy and weapons charges. In Liberty, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
And stay with Radio Catskill for the latest breaking news on this story from NPR. Now, the flu is hitting New York harder than ever. State health officials say hospitalizations jumped 24% in just 1 week, the highest total ever recorded. Joining us now with more is Dr. Jody Galitic, epidemiologist at Garnet Health. We should note Garnet Health is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. Doctor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
What are you seeing right now in our region when it comes to flu activity?
So flu activity currently in Orange and Sullivan County is extremely high. Just last week, the state reported over 71,000 lab-confirmed flu cases in a single week, and this has been the highest number ever recorded in 1 week in New York.
You know, it's winter. We know where we live. How does this flu season compare to what you would normally expect, though, in late December, early January?
So we're running higher than what we typically run this time of year. We haven't even hit peak yet. We're already above last year's peak, so we're seeing a lot more cases earlier in the season.
And why are flu cases and hospitalizations rising so quickly right now?
One is that we're just seeing a lot more virus circulating in the community. Other reasons would be there's holiday travel, holiday gatherings. We also see more than just flu this time of year. We're still seeing COVID and RSV. And also this year, not as many people have received the vaccine as in years past.
Are we seeing more cases, more severe illness, or both?
We're seeing more cases that is not usual for this time of year in New York. And with that, we do see more hospitalizations. Cases don't seem to be more severe, but with more cases, you're going to have more people getting hospitalized just because of the amount of flu that's in the community.
And are you seeing more cases among people who thought maybe the flu wouldn't be quite a big deal this year, or just, you know, sort of, you mentioned like lack of vaccinization, people just sort of becoming complacent about it?
We're seeing more cases. So yes, we're seeing people that, you know, thought flu wasn't a big deal, and people still get very sick with the flu. It's not a simple cold. People that are at higher risk tend to get sicker. So we're definitely seeing those people that didn't think it was going to be a big deal getting sick with the flu.
And talk about who those folks at higher risk are. Who's most vulnerable to serious complications from flu this season?
So the high-risk groups are the same as they've been in the past. So adults over the age of 65 or older, young children, especially under the age 5, pregnant people, people with chronic conditions such as heart disease, lung disease, asthma, COPD, weakened immune system, people with kidney or liver disease, diabetes, and then residents of nursing homes and long-term care facilities.
We should note that the flu is not just circulating rapidly in New York. It's rising across 32 states, according to CDC data as well. And some of that driven by this new variant. Can you talk about that variant and also, you know, how that impacts the current vaccinations that people, or the vaccine that people could get?
So we are seeing the new variant, H3, clad K. The vaccine is not as effective in terms of what we have currently, but we see this year after year. The vaccine's not perfect, but it's still very important to get the vaccine because people who are vaccinated still see less severe outcomes with flu, less hospitalization, less illness.
That's important to note too. Like the as you said, it's not perfect, but the flu vaccine does help even when it's not a perfect match to some of these circulating strains, right?
Correct.
And so is it still worth getting a flu shot for someone who hasn't had it yet?
Absolutely. We see flu go all the way into about February and March. And as I said before, we haven't even hit our peak yet. So definitely if you have not received your flu vaccine this year, now is the time to get it.
How long does it take after vaccination to build protection?
Roughly about 2 weeks.
And so you could potentially still get the flu after being vaccinated within that time frame?
You could get the flu during that time. Again, it's not, but typically the average person will take about 2 weeks.
Right.
Again, still would recommend getting the flu vaccine.
And let's just talk about prevention. I mean, we say this every winter, I think, but I think it's, again, of course, important to remind folks when someone should stay home and manage symptoms on their own versus, you know, calling a doctor or seeking urgent care.
So in general, if you're just having fever, body aches, sore throat, cough, and fatigue, but you can still breathe comfortably, you can still eat and drink, you're still alert, you don't have serious underlying conditions, usually it's safe to stay at home. If you have underlying conditions like COPD, asthma, weakened immune systems, if you're starting to have difficulty breathing, chest pain, shortness of breath, any blue or gray lips or face, or if you notice your family member or loved one getting confused, that definitely means it's time to go and be checked out either by urgent care or hospital. If there's severe signs of dehydration, if there's persistent fever that doesn't improve, or if symptoms suddenly worsen, you should definitely consider reaching out to a healthcare provider.
What are the particular symptoms parents should watch out for in children?
Kids are sometimes a little bit harder, especially kids that are younger. But if your children have faster labor breathing, rib pulling, flaring nostrils, again, any bluish lips or face, any change in if they're, unusual confusion, far more fussy than usual, if they're not waking up, not interacting as much, not eating, not drinking, not making wet diapers, definitely consider going to your healthcare provider. If your child looks more ill or just is really not like themselves, again, reach out to your healthcare provider.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Jody Galadek, epidemiologist at Garnet Health, about the surge in flu cases across the country and particularly here in New York. You mentioned, Doctor, earlier that it's not just flu. Again, other respiratory illnesses, COVID, RSV. How can people tell the difference between flu, COVID, RSV, and maybe just a bad cold?
So for flu, typically it's a sudden onset, high fever, body aches, chills, dry cough, exhaustion. COVID can overlap this, but also can include loss of taste or smell, sore throat, congestion, also gastrointestinal diseases. And then RSV usually causes a lot of mucus, wheezing, respiratory distress in babies and young children or older adults. And then bad colds, again, can be congestion, runny nose, sore throat. And there's usually less intense fevers and aches. And again, sometimes it is very difficult to tell if these symptoms overlap.
Is it possible to have more than one of these viruses at the same time?
Yes, we have seen some co-infections, flu and COVID together, flu and RSV. So you can have more than one virus at once.
Besides vaccination, what are some practical steps people can take to reduce the risk right now?
So if you are sick, you should stay at home. Don't try to push through a fever, a heavy cough, or body aches. Really stay home from work or school. If you're going to crowded indoor spaces, consider wearing a well-fitted mask, especially if you're at high risk. Considered improved ventilation, open windows when possible, HEPA filters, high-quality filters, and shared spaces. Hand hygiene is always important, so wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and then remember to cover your coughs and sneezes and to clean high-touch surfaces that may get contaminated.
Just from a frontline personal view, what kind of strain is this flu season putting on hospitals and emergency rooms locally, like at Garnet? And what can the public do to help avoid overwhelming the healthcare system?
So as we see, whenever we have any type of surge, there's more of an influx into the hospitals. So we've had more hospitalizations, especially this last week. We've had the highest number. Again, it puts a strain on the system because more people are visiting the emergency room. There's delays in care. You know, there's waits in the emergency room because there's not beds available. So again, things that the public can do, get your vaccine, both COVID and flu. If you're not as sick, consider using the urgent care or telehealth if it's a non-emergency issue, and then trying to reserve the emergency room for true issues. And again, trying to take preventive measures, as we spoke about before, staying home if you're sick, wearing a well-fitted mask, washing your hands.
I know that the we're in the middle of the winter, the heart of winter coming into this right now. So, of course, flu cases could continue to rise. I wrote this question down. Could cases continue to rise? Well, I think the answer is yes. So what should people keep in mind as we move through this next phase of winter?
I mean, we probably will see more cases. Usually it peaks midwinter, and we're just in the beginning of winter. And again, the flu can stay active until early spring. Keep up with vaccination, basic precautions, pay close attention to symptoms, especially in anyone that's high risk.
And what's the single most important message you want listeners to hear about the flu prevention, staying healthy right now?
Get your flu shot if you haven't gotten it. Stay home when you're sick, mask in crowded spaces, and, be proactive and take care of yourself. And
All right. That's Dr. Jody Galanik, who is the epidemiologist for Garnet Health. You can find more information at garnethealth.org. Doctor, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
Hi, Ira Flatto here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and happy Monday. There we go. Dolly and I getting back into the swing of things here. That just means it's time to talk to our own local economist and author, James B. Huntington. First time in the new year, Dr. James B., hello.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
I'm a little rusty here getting back into the new year, but we're here and you're here to tell us about the latest economic news and how this news out of Venezuela, the capture of the president there and now facing charges later today in a Manhattan courtroom, how these events are affecting our economy. How will they affect our economy?
Doesn't look like a lot of big things. We've had some disturbance of airline schedules and such, but it's not going to be an ongoing military thing, not going to be a lot of activity there. The change we won't be able to avoid, though, is if our president gets the oil industry there moving a lot faster. They have great masses of reserves underground, possibly more than any other country, and yet they've been underselling, underachieving in how much business they're doing. So if a lot of oil hits the market, prices will have to go down one way or another, though it probably would not be a huge amount, maybe a dollar or two a barrel, maybe not even that much. But that's all we're looking at right now.
And I heard earlier on Marketplace Morning Report that perhaps the market hasn't reacted as much as you might think it would because it's sort of still absorbing the news, sort of wait and see what happens with this administration because there have been so many of these sort of, you know, shocking events and then they sort of change afterward.
Yes, and there's really not a lot to happen. We don't do a great deal of business with Venezuela. There have been restrictions and sanctions and such things going on preventing that. So there isn't really much effect other than the oil price. And if there are signs of that fizzling out, then oil won't be affected at all.
Which could be a long and evolved process. Let's talk about some things that Wall Street analysts are predicting for the stock market this year. What are the crystal ball folks saying for 2026?
Another banner year for markets. That's what they are expecting. More of the same. A lot of good reasons for things doing well, the economy's growing, corporate profits are getting higher and higher. The Fed also, we're expecting that the Fed is going to cut interest rates a couple times more despite the employment problems we've had. Consumer spending has hung on. The holiday season did better than a lot of people expected. Even with inflation well above 2%, it seems like it's going to be under control. So looking at much the same, it never seems to work out exactly as what they they say. We don't know. The bear case for 2026 is one section heading here, though. And it mentions, first of all, AI bubble fears that there may be a pullback in how much artificial intelligence chips are selling and how much people are successfully able to do with it, in particular building data centers. I went on the record to predict that AI would have a disappointing year, that it would max out for several reasons in the middle of the year, that it's not going to be crashing, although we are due for some companies, possibly large companies, to go out of business just because of the nature of the beast. It's also having problems with sales coming mainly from people who are supplying the AI companies, not so much the product itself, which have been weak at times and are not blasting off. So Wall Street, in general, thinks it's going to be a good year, so let's not argue with it for now.
Well, what do the financial analysts predict for the overall American economy in 2026?
That one's good, too. Expected to grow faster this year, despite the stagnant job market. We have the U.S. economy projected. They are projecting 2.6% real GDP growth, which is anything over 2% is really actually good. We have more favorable financial conditions in general taking hold and less disturbance from tariffs and inflation. We also have a real possibility. There's been a lot of representations made from the White House about larger tax refunds. Could be an extra $100 billion, which is 0.4% of annual disposable income. So there's always the question with the people who are benefiting from this, how much of that is going to get spent instead of invested. But it's another possibility, a real thing. And they also mention the interest rate cuts, which business and the economy certainly like when they are prudent to do.
Mm-hmm. So what are the big questions for business and the economy this year? I think we boiled it down to 8 big questions.
Yes, this is... We have number one, what happens when more AI initiatives leave the pilot stage? A lot of things, a lot of projects that companies have been going into effect but really aren't running now. And there are a lot of AI-related products which have proven proof of concept, have done that, but they aren't really being sold right now. So if those things materialize as marketable products and such, that will be very good. Two, how will our president's policies affect the economy? We don't really know. Three, is private credit a ticking time bomb? And the idea here that there could be problems with private lending cutting way down, especially if AI shows signs of weakness and it's not officially any crash, but they're not able to get nearly as much money to borrow, which they badly need. Four, will prediction markets maintain their momentum? It was a big story, actually, last year that the prediction markets are getting significant and getting high valuations as their own products in the billions of dollars often. So we don't know. They're also heading for a collision with regulators because you can use prediction markets to predict the outcome of sports events and put money on it, and that's not really necessarily wide open. Five, is crypto too big to fail? There's real volatility. We had that big correction earlier in the year, which wiped out $1 trillion in October. We're wondering if it's going to continue staying stable or will it have more problems. Six, will the space industry blast off? That's predicted to be a multi-trillion dollar industry over the next 10 years or so, where China wants to land on the moon in 4 years, and NASA is going back. There could be a new space race, a lot of things which generate a lot in sales. 7, will Democrats regain their leverage in Washington? They are considered big favorites to take over the House, but that's late in the year. And there are other things, other elections and other things happening. So if that materializes, they will be in good shape, and obviously there will be some substantial changes. And 8, what's in store for oil prices? It was a great year for the rest of us, for those not in the industry, because it went down, and it may go down further, indications that it may decrease. So there are other questions about Warner Brothers Discovery, about Mayor Mamdani in the city, about Wall Street bidding on college football, Korean culture, and the World Cup, which is in this country mostly, later this year. Yeah. All these things are possibilities that could have real effect one way or the other on the economy.
And I understand that, like, they're even talking about predicting politics within some of that betting as well.
It's politics. Yeah. If you go onto one of those sites, you'll see that it's predictions on upcoming presidential or political races of all sorts, local ones, foreign ones, and the characteristics of ones that are even way off, like what party will win the 2028 U.S. one. And yes, mostly that's what's out there.
I know you've got another story about top paying jobs for all 16 Myers-Briggs personality types, but we don't have enough time right now to get to all of those. So let's just jump into the numbers at the beginning of the year here. What were the stock prices, oil, all those prices from this morning, and how did they change?
Okay, we're back to 1 week changes. So as of early this morning, these are the differences I'll give you between today and early morning a week ago, this past Monday. Gold, $44.32 the ounce, down 40, down a bit. Silver, $76.09, up 29 cents. It's been jumping up and down, touring the 70s, really. The ratio is 58-1 between silver and gold, which is way down from, really, the 10 years or 15 years ending the middle of last year. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 48,398, down 329, off a bit, nothing big. NASDAQ, 23,236, down 357, off more, but we're really talking about the equivalent of a bad day added on to a flat week. Otherwise, the ratio between NASDAQ and the Dow is coming up on 2-1 instead of 3-1 or so, which mostly was before. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 57.30, down 62 cents, and heading lower. Bitcoin, 92,698, up 4,800 and some. A good week. Well, is it heading up for 100,000, or is it going to go back into the 80s or do something else? One never knows with cryptocurrency. British pound, 1.3442, down about half a cent. As the dollar strengthens, the euro went down almost a penny, though, to 1.1680. And the Japanese 100 yen coin held on at 64 cents. So overall, this was a slightly down week. This week, for various reasons, rates to be better.
All right, keeping an eye on it all in the new year. It's James B. Huntington, local economist and author. Joins us every Monday. Looking forward to the new year, James B.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners. Use your mind and they never give you credit.
It's enough to drive you crazy. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a preview of the Janice Adams Show, tonight's episode. Janice is with us next. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
The start of a new year is a natural moment to set new goals and shake up old habits. And Hidden Brain is here to help with the latest installment of our You 2.0 series. Whether you're struggling with self-criticism, a lack of patience, or finding the courage to make a big change, we've got your back. That's You 2.0 all through the month of January. Join us today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
NPR shows the work behind our journalism.
So I had to search through 130,000-plus contracts to see if I could match them up with what Doge shared.
So you don't have to guess at how we got the story.
I've been doing this a long time, and these conversations are among the most sensitive I've ever had.
Support rigorous independent journalism today. Make your gift to the station. And thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Tonight's episode of the Janice Adams Show at 8 on Radio Catskill is a conversation with Felipe Zurita Quintana of the Charter for Compassion, a global movement active in more than 440 cities and 54 countries worldwide. The charter inspired by scholar Karen Armstrong and the Golden Rule. Janice speaks to Felipe about how he went from trying to pray the gay away in a conservative church to rejecting religiously fueled homophobia and finding healing through self-compassion and interfaith work. I spoke to her earlier this morning for a preview.
Yes, Felipe Zurita Quintana. That alone, the history and the name. But I had met him because he is the marketing director for an organization called the Charter for Compassion, and we can talk about that later. But I was so struck with just his presence that I asked him if he'd like to be a guest on the show. I asked him to send me a bio. And the bio that he sent me was four words: millennial, Latinx, immigrant, and queer. And with that, you know I was hooked. It wasn't a matter of an invitation, it was when. And so we did get to tape the show. He grew up in Chile, with privilege, with access to a good education in an ultra-conservative, homophobic Catholic environment. And he goes so far as to convert to Mormonism. Wow. As a teenager, and actually in the process becomes a missionary. So he talks about that in this clip, which we're calling The Day the Missionary Stopped Believing.
You are a full 24/7 Mormon missionary. It's not like you have a little break. It's not like you have your time. Like, you are full every day. Monday, you get like 6 hours to do laundry, prepare for the week, write letters to your family, because you don't have contact with anyone for the 2 years, except for via email or letters. And so you don't really have time for yourself. And you're always preaching. And like, you're studying so much about the, you know, you read their scriptures and you study how to teach them and all this stuff all day every day. Well, and you knock doors and you try to find people to talk to and whatnot. Well, I was at a meeting early morning on a Sunday where like the leadership of that my congregation that I was helping got together. And at the end of it, they were talking about how they were going to let the congregation know that we need to go all canvas this neighborhood and tell people to vote no on Prop 8. And that just didn't hit right for me, because I was really in the Mormon church for me to be like, you know what? I want to learn about Jesus. I want to like be like him. I want to be healed. I want to have a family and get married and all these things that are like, you know, you get so ingrained as a kid. And it just didn't sound well. And then they did it again. And they said it on the podium, right? Like, oh, we're going to go to Brother So-and-so neighborhood and we're going to canvas this neighborhood. And, and at that point, I realized that there was like a click. There was like a switch in my head or something that made me realize why am I living up to the standards of these people that don't know me, of this religion that doesn't get me? Why am I so upset and so sad and so ashamed of myself when the one thing that I'm following, right, Jesus, and this example of righteousness and goodness, is getting tainted by this full of hatred, like opinion or position, you know? And that's when I realized that I had just gotten my answer. I healed because I realized that I was fine the way I am. That, like, being gay is not evil. Being gay is not bad. Being gay is not... As a matter of fact, I'm a really great person.
Yeah.
That happens to love the same sex as I am. And so that...
Along with a lot of other people in the world from across the millennia who... That's a part of their humanity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so,
you know, you are talking about the Mormon Church, the Catholic Church, the church in general. I must say, I am familiar with the Mormon Church and the church in general because I went to Mills College in Oakland, California, and Oakland, California has one of the largest Mormon tabernacles outside of Utah, mm-hmm. and Salt Lake City. And when I arrived on my campus, Mills College, which is not a Mormon college, but it was a woman's school. And it was where wealthy Mormons sent their daughters for college. That was almost kind of a finishing school, but it really was a very fine women's college. And my early days at Mills as a dark-skinned person was just ridiculous. With the lack of information of my fellow students, I have to be just honest about it. It was like, I remember one girl was assigned to show me around the campus, and her comments about Black people were just downright stupid. I'm just tired of being gracious to people who are anything but gracious to me and other people. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the laundry room, she made this whole buildup to, I don't know if you've ever seen this kind of thing before, but I want to show you this, and you'll be spending a lot of time here while you're on campus. She said, now, this is a washing machine? And I said, my goodness, with what you think of me, that should be the one thing I would know. You know, it was that absurd. So I tell that ridiculous story. It is not really about Mormonism. It because the Catholic church girls had their own problems, and so did, you know, the racial thing was so embedded and ingrained. And I am pretty sure the homophobic issues that they had were also similarly ingrained. Absolutely. So I say that in simpatico, but to also then from your point, you said you became healed in that environment, which interestingly, the two churches that you had gone to combined efforts on you,
essentially, in my existence,
on your existence, and put huge sums of money into your existence. How did you heal from that? What was the turning point in your head that said, with all of this and your family even converting and all of this, that no, what's inside of you was right, and the stuff that was coming from outside is what was wrong?
I think, you know, that moment that I was telling you about being at church as a missionary and then hearing the bishop, which is like the presiding body of, you know, the congregation, just switch the talk and the feeling, that sense from Jesus and Jesus's teachings to kind of like see how people that are not in the religion that also always complain about the religion. You know, I kind of like saw it at the moment where people said sometimes you use religion to control people or to tell them what to do by hiding with the lessons of this all-loving God or caring characters or prophets or whatever it is. But really, all you're doing is telling people what to think, what to believe, and how to do it. And you will do it explicitly sometimes. And this was the moment where it happened so explicitly, where it was there wasn't anything about God. It was about, we need to tell people to vote no on this legislation. And I'm gonna use my congregation to canvass this neighborhood. And there was no Jesus involved in that sentence or in that statement.
That is Janice Adams speaking to Felipe Zurita Quintana for the latest episode of The Janice Adams Show. Janice, a very striking conversation.
It really was. It went in a direction that I did not anticipate, which is really what I love about doing the show. But before I tell you what I think about it, what do you think about it? What stood out for you?
Well, I think his realization that he was fine the way he was made, that, you know, thing that clicked in his head, that it wasn't about God at all, but that about controlling people and erasing people like him, and that he realized he was fine the way he is.
And it just is such an emotionally companionable show. And it's for anybody who is being systemically marginalized at this point. You know, for queer people, for ex-believers, for people disillusioned with institutions, and kind of anyone just at this point, and there are so many of us, carrying too much history in our bodies. This episode really felt like a walking companion to me, even as I was doing it. And, you know, when these days, when something makes you feel more human and less alone, not only do you listen once, but it gives you the opportunity to listen twice, to listen again, and listen with your internal self knowing that there's something there special for you. So I was very grateful to him for doing this episode, for doing this. As I say, it went, there were times, honestly, when he was rather emotional. And I asked him why, and he said, you know, because he's lived with this for a long time. But he said that, in a way, it was the first time that he just felt open to discuss it. And so I think that's part of what people will hear. And especially at this time when we are being silenced for this reason or silenced for that reason, and people use their own preferred excuse as the vehicle and rationale for doing the unthinkable to other people, I was very happy to be able to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And Tim, if I might just say, this ended up being an outgrowth of the show, but the Charter for Compassion actually invited me to join them for what they call their global reads. And I do want people to, I hope you can listen to the show tonight. It is about Felipe, but the context of it is the Charter for Compassion, which is an extraordinary organization that is active in more than 440 cities in 54 countries and just asks us all to exhibit compassion for one another. And I will be their guest on Wednesday, January 28th.
And compassion is something we can all use right about now. Janice Adams, The Janice Adams Show, is tonight at 8 on Radio Catskill, featuring a conversation with Felipe Zurita Quintana. Janice Adams, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
And you can get more information about Janice's talk with the Charter for Compassion group at charterforcompassion.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about the Forest Lake Club in Holly. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got exotic sounds by the What It Do Archive Group, the Surfmen, and Living Percussion. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. More than a century ago, long before paved roads and weekend traffic, a group of families traveled by train and horse-drawn carriage into the forests of northeastern Pennsylvania looking for a quiet, open space. In 1882, they founded what became the Forest Lake Club, building a small camp that would grow into a private member-owned community shaped by fishing, hiking, shared meals, and generations of tradition. Over time, the club expanded its lakes, trails, and gathering spaces, but held on to a simple idea, preserving nature and building community around it. Today, the Forest Lake Club is still guided by that founding vision. And joining us now to talk more about the Forest Lake Club is Melissa Straharsky, the club's membership, marketing, and events manager. She's joining us live in studio as part of our partnership with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos and our Chamber Chats. Melissa, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tim. I'm happy to be here.
Well, tell us more about the Forest Lake Club. We were talking off air here about it. I've never heard of the Forest Lake Club. Talk about more about this particular place and what makes it so unique in our region.
Yeah, it's just this little hidden gem. Well, not so little. It's 4,700 acres in Hawley, Pennsylvania, which is located on the upper portion of Pike County, bordering Wayne County. And just to give you some perspective in the location, it's about a 15-minute drive out of Narrowsburg, New York. So we kind of share the border of the Delaware River here.
So you might be driving by it or around it and may not know it, but there's this whole like area.
Yes.
You oversee membership, marketing, and events.
Yes.
Talk a little bit more about your role and what a typical season is for you. You just started in May, I learned.
I just started in May, so I'm pretty new to the company, but it's just been a wonderful experience. What I really love about the club is the history, and you touched on that just a minute ago. Started in 1882, just started with a humble little campground, and it grew into what it is today, which it features a Victorian Gothic style clubhouse, which is like the main focus of the club. It's where everybody meets in the morning after breakfast and talks about what they're going to do for the day. So it's really a community-driven based on hunting and fishing.
Well, and I talked about how folks came up here originally to look for that open space and bound by these outdoor activities. Is that still, you said that's still the case now? Is that what people are looking for when they come to look at joining the Forest Lake Club?
Absolutely. They're looking for a serene environment away from the hustle and bustle of the city. They just want some peace and quiet and a place to retreat. We do have some residency there too. Some live there year round and some use Forest Lake Club as their second home, which will be, you know, something I would want to hope to do someday.
We talked about this long history of the club founded in 1882. How do you balance honoring that history while welcoming new members and new ideas?
I don't know.
Listen to everybody.
It's just, you know, I don't really know how to answer that.
Well, and is it mainly allowing folks to come in with new ideas that aren't bound by just only, you can only fish here, you can only hike here. You're opening up to other things and other experiences.
We are. We're actually opening up the club to non-member events.
And what are some of those?
Yeah, so we had our first wedding this past September, which was the history of the club to have the first wedding as a non-member. And we have another wedding coming up this September. So we're just really opening it up to different events. We're also hosting a chamber mixer on May 7th, just to try to get folks from the local area to know about us. We're a hidden gem, like I said. Nobody knows we're there.
Well, and is that is that part of why you're doing that? It's because it is hidden in a way, and to just be more outward facing is more inclusive and showing people what you have to offer, either as a non-member or a private member.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And how's that been going? Have you been getting a good response?
So far, so good. Yeah, we had a couple new member tours this past week, And, you know, when we do have a new member, you know, who is interested in the club, we really want to hone in on what their interests are, whether it's hunting or hiking. And some just want to come to relax.
Yeah. And it's focused on the outdoors, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, lakes, trails, outdoor recreation. That lifestyle seems to be resonating even more now these days. We were also talking about like both being you know, refugees from major cities, you in Boston, me in Manhattan, and how you need to get away. And that resonates with people coming up, even if they're not coming by horse-drawn carriage.
Right. Yeah, back in the day, it was via the river and horse-drawn carriage to get there. But still, it's kind of up in the woods and...
Yeah, and you've got some other events coming up this season. Are you excited about some things that are coming up you want to share?
We are. So for the members, we do have a lot of annual events, which the members look forward to every year. One of them, which I really grown to love, is called the Gold Rush. And so really what that is for the children of the members or grandchildren. They come and they kind of, quote unquote, hunt for gold, which are essentially these golden nuggets, which are rocks that are spray painted in gold paint, hidden all over campus. And the kids go out and they go hunting for gold and they come back with their findings. They get weighed and then they exchange it for money, you know, fake money, Monopoly money, Forest Lake Club money, and they get prizes. So it's really a community-wide event where the members themselves volunteer to be a part of it in different ways, which really just speaks to the sense of community.
What do you enjoy most about working for the Forest Lake Club? Just having been there since May, what do you enjoy the most?
What I really love is just seeing somebody come and just breathe and relax. You can kind of almost see them wind down. We do have a lot of members coming from like the Manhattan area. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, they're coming home. Mm-hmm. And whether they're hiking with their families or going out on a boat or having a private picnic, you can just kind of tell that they're almost like a different person.
Yeah, they suddenly shed all of that stress and anxiety.
Yes.
How can folks get more information?
They can contact me via my email, which is membership@forestlakeclub.net. Or you can visit our website, which is www.theforestlakeclub.org. I'm sorry, .net.
.net. The Forest Lake Club.
The Forest Lake Club.
.net.
Yes.
Got it. That's Melissa Straharsky. She is the Membership Marketing and Events Manager for the Forest Lake Club in Hawley. Joining us as part of our partnership with Chamber of the Northern Poconos. There's more information about the chamber at northernpoconos.org. Melissa, thank you so much. You did a great job.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. But before we go, a reminder to tune into the local edition tonight for an exclusive interview with 19th Congressional District Representative Josh Riley. Kimberly Izar spoke to him about his first year in office in 2025, what lies ahead in 2026. They also dig into the many issues that faced rural New Yorkers, from high utility bills to frozen USDA funding. And they'll also talk about what's top of mind for him leading up to the midterms. That's tonight on the local edition at 6 here on Radio Catskill. That'll do it for us. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Affordability, inflation, tariffs, jobs, where does the economy stand now that we're officially in the new year?
Inflation is something that people feel. It's not just about the statistics. I don't think that this issue of affordability is going away.
The Money Ladies, Rana Faruhar and Michelle Singletary, are back to help us prepare financially for 2026. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Coming up next on Radio Catskill, Today's weather, intermittent snow flurries accumulating to maybe a coating to an inch, but some untreated surfaces will be slippery. You know the drill. High 26. Tonight, a couple of evening flurries, otherwise cloudy, low of 23. We might see some ice tomorrow night. Be on the lookout for that. Tuesday, warming up a little bit to 36 with some afternoon rain. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.